is an interview with Governor Attia at his office in downtown Portland, Oregon. The date is January 13th, 1993. The interviewer for the Oregon Historical Society is Clark Hansen, and this is tape 13, side A.
What? The description of the problem is fairly easy.
Mm-hmm.
For all these decades, there's been sort of an unwritten thing in the sense that local government, you have the property tax, state government will have the income tax. Now, it's important to remember that the state can levy a property tax. As a matter of fact, in many cases, we have to levy a property tax related to our bonds. If we're unable to pay our bonds, then by our own statutes. And so that's part of the security, for example, for these tax-free bonds. So, that's been going on now for decades. Let's now say that we collect $4 million in income tax. Obviously, we collect a lot more than that. But for the simplicity of it, $4 million in income tax. Ballot Measure 5 said, we're going to reduce property taxes. Now, state, you have to make up the loss. Because local governments have been running and they have their budgets and people approve their budgets.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you say we're going to just take it off the property tax, we're going to take it off the property tax roll and we're going to put it on the income tax roll.
Mm-hmm.
That's what Ballot 5 said. Now we're back to our $4 million. State's been operating on $4 million, all of the programs. Education, human resource, corrections, and everything. And all of a sudden, the state has to put $1 million of this $4 million to local government. So now we're dealing with $3 million for everything that everything state government's all about.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's the problem. Problem number one. Now, I would agree, because I believe it, that we can get more efficiency in government. I believe that. Matter of fact, I demonstrated that when I was governor. But not $1,300,000,000. You know, I know enough you'd cut maybe $300 million. Maybe. Maybe $400 million. But, you know, we still got almost a billion dollar problem. Now what does that really mean? I'm now talking to Oregonians. What does that mean? Well, we fund, for example, and I think the greatest at-risk, incidentally, is higher education. We fund higher education, among other things. Well, we can't afford to do that anymore, or not at least at the level that we have been doing it before. And we're going to have to raise tuition, which makes it more difficult for our young people to go to college.
Mm-hmm.
We still can't make up the difference of the loss of higher education. There are a lot of people in need in human resource and welfare and children's services, and youth children, corrections, prisons, law enforcement. You know, I can go into the whole budget. But the point is that we're going to have to squeeze all of that into 3/4 of what we were spending before. Oh, well, the public says, hooray, good, let's do just that. But that's not good for the state of Oregon. Now, I'm saying, and I believe what Larry Campbell, for example, says, we got to cut. And I believe that. I think we got to cut. But we're still going to have a huge gap,
mm-hmm.
this biennium, which is going to become even larger next biennium. And so we've got to do something about it. But until Oregonians believe we've got a problem, they're not going to do anything about it. I've used the example, if anybody pays attention, and I'm not sure how many would understand the example. But I do recall for many years, many, many years, when they were talking about education in the United States and the quality of education in the United States and whatever measuring stick they were using, California always ranked very high.
Mm-hmm.
I also know since Proposition 13, I haven't heard that anymore. I've never heard of it. That's what's going to happen to us. And ballot five really is a corrosive thing. It doesn't just, we don't fall off the edge of the cliff. If we had, or we're going to instantly know we got a problem. But that's not what really happened. Now, you ask, we're back to where we were. That's what you need to, you know, Oregonians are not dumb people. And they're very generous people. And if they understand there's a problem, they're very willing to solve it. But I know that Oregonians don't think there's a problem. Well, cut the fat out. That's a typical word. Cut the fat out. I'm saying, yeah, there's fat, but there's not that much fat. Long way from that much fat.
So are you looking to a revenue then?
Well, it'll have to be revenue. But now we're back to what I have done. You asked me the question, and I'm answering the question, and I'm answering the question that said to you, when I had the State of the State address with everybody's attention around the United States, I mean the state of Oregon,
right?
I would have started laying out what the problem is. Instead of generically talking about, well, we got a problem, and the way I'm going to do it is by cleaning out the attic and moving general services over to exec department. A lost opportunity. That's what I'm really saying to you. And obviously, we're never going to get everybody to agree to it, but when Oregonians genuinely understand we got a problem, and that's not what we want our state to be, then you can come to them with, we can start talking about what is the revenue, which one, how are we going to do it. You don't talk about it now. You got to convince them first. And when they're not convinced, I would say to you that I've never been, well, I shouldn't say never. Throughout most of my career, I've only supported sales tax once, one time. Other than that, I've always been an opponent of sales tax. But I would say to you that the only answer is the sales tax. There is no other. When I say that to you, in legally, we could increase the income tax. But we're already known as the highest income tax state. And that we want to get people coming in here. We want them to create jobs for Oregonians. We're going to grow. So, you know, when I say politically or economically, income tax is not the way to do it. Clearly, we can't do it with increasing property taxes because the folks just voted that one, cut for themselves on that one. What's left? Sales tax. Well, back even way back to your original question. You know what? So what's leadership? Talking about it or doing something about it?
And what would you do then? I guess maybe you've said in part that you would communicate to the people of Oregon that there is a sincere problem, and my understanding is that a lot of people have already been doing that, been trying to communicate that, but not been able to establish credibility among the people. How would you establish that credibility to get across that there really is a problem?
I think being as direct as I've been with you. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've talked to the most rabid people who say, cut the fat. And I give them the same answer. There's fat. There's fat, and there's fat not only in government, there's fat in any business you look at. Mm-hmm. You know, go to any corporation or any business you like, there's fat there. But there's not that much fat. We still got a problem after we've cut the fat. Now what are you going to do about it? I mean, you know, there's a human reaction, simple answers to complex questions. Mm-hmm. You got to understand it and try to work your way through it. I still believe in a democracy. I believe in the system of government. You give people the facts, and maybe it'll turn it down. But you got to give it a good, solid, clear, straight. Response to what a responsible person knows. The governor knows this.
What was the governor's response to your comments when you talked to her the other day?
Well, I think she agreed. And that's why maybe I was even surprised, because, you know, I've gone through this and I've got a speech and I'm getting ready to deliver a speech before I join the assembly of the legislature. And in my conversation, I was really expecting a lot more. Because I'm listening to what she's saying, and I think, well, she's already thought about these things, and some of this is in her speech somewhere. But she didn't do anything like that. Mm. Well, we got a problem, you know, but she says, and then she gets into water and a few other things. Not that these aren't problems, but we have a major problem. And again, the attention is drawn to Salem and the governor and the state of the state in an opening session, and the media is covering it all over the state of Oregon. What a great opportunity to, you know, again, reinforce the fact that there's a problem. And I was really disappointed. I really was. So I get back to, you know, what in the world is leadership all about? What is it? What is it? And it seems to me, and this is the disappointing thing to me, because I feel so strongly about what I'm telling you, that I'm only interested in results. I'm not interested in making speeches. I'm not interested in blue ribbon task forces. I'm not interested in electronic conversation with Oregon. You know, all that stuff. That's all cosmetic. I'm not interested in cosmetic. I don't want cosmetic. What I want is is a result. Mm-hmm. And yet I have to tell you honestly that no one perceives me to be one of the great leaders of all time. I'm not uncomfortable with where I am and how I feel. But, you know, if you start talking about eloquence or charisma, I'm way down the list somewhere. Hmm. And yet I do believe that during my 8 years, we jumped way ahead. That we did accomplish some real things. So I'm still puzzled. I really am. I'm very puzzled about what's called leadership. And we're in the JFK as well. Charisma, yes. Camelot, maybe. and I've got some other moral questions about the whole Kennedy family, including JFK, but that's not for this discussion.
But, you know, going back to your question on leadership, and I guess it's kind of, I mean, it's an interesting thing because you're approaching we're a little bit away from your terms as governor, but during this term, during the term that we've been currently talking about, the 1971 legislature, the governor at the time was Tom McCall.
Yes.
And here was a person I think you've described, other people have described, as a person who maybe had some substance, but also was a great person for creating the aura or the appearance of larger activity and mm-hmm. And that may have helped establish him as a great leader when maybe or maybe not. Who knows? I mean, comparing what he produced in his 8 years and what you produced in your 8 years as governor, his flair may have left a more I don't want to say brilliant mark, but he had this sort of media charisma that made a big impression on things that he did, even if those things did not have a great amount of substance.
Well, no.
Do you know what I'm saying?
I know what you're saying. And I would not accuse his administration of not much substance or success, mm-hmm. Because he did. Now, I think we mentioned earlier, it was not necessarily because he invented something. He didn't invent the bottle bill.
Right.
For which he gets credit. He didn't invent the environmental program, for which he gets credit. But the fact is, he grabbed it, he ran with it. He was the speaker for. He was an outpoint person, and that's all productive. That's all productive. And I think I've said earlier in the tape, I consider that he will go down as one of the great governors in our history, mm-hmm. and I have no doubt about that. Mm-hmm. So I wouldn't say that about him at all. I have said, and I have said it to him. I was introducing him one time. I think it was after he was governor. But I said, you know, I really admire Tom, and I really do. Actually, I thought it was sort of a compliment. I'm not sure he took it that way. Because I said, you know, he was very tenacious, and he was. He'd grab hold of something, he just wouldn't let go. And then I went on to say, whether he was right or wrong. and so that's, in fact, the case. You know, sometimes you go down the wrong road, but that's okay. Oops, I made a mistake. Let's go on to the next one. And so he had a lot of great attributes, and I do contend, you know, if I try to be, people say to me, well, how's history going to treat me? Well, that's not to me. I don't know how history's going to treat me. History's going to make their own judgments about me. But I'm not foolish enough to believe that Tom McCall isn't going to be wherever I fit in the category of governors in Oregon. I'm not going to be above the Tom McCall.
And why?
I think mainly because of the great misunderstanding about, you know, what's important. Maybe it's not fair, but at least I'll make a comparison because I've said it again in the speeches. Oregon had paid a lot of attention, and we've got, and we're really in love with our environment, mm-hmm. and we are, and we're proud of it, and I'm proud of what part I played in it. And I said, you know, when we start talking about land use planning and clean air and clean water, what I'm really doing is I'm making a gift to my children and my grandchildren and their children, you know. Because I know, you know, they keep talking about Santa Clara Valley and California, and I say, hey, don't worry about that. Oregon doesn't have to worry about that. We've got all these laws in place. Nobody else has them like we have. But we haven't, remember I talked about South Africa and the United States. Mm-hmm. We did a great deal and get really excited about the environment, and I think appropriately so. But we haven't stirred up the same excitement about the human resource. We haven't done as much for them. You know, I'm known for Trader Vic and economic development. That's where I'm coming from. We got our environmental laws in place. We can fix them up. We can tinker. We can improve. And we did during my administration. And we did many things that related to, I think, one of the great things that happened. It gets very little attention. Is an alternate renewable energy and a task force. They came up with a great report, a really good report. I said, I don't want to talk about wind and tide and all these things. I want to know when and how much and what's the barriers to getting there. That's what I want to know. And they did a great job in that regard. So my emphasis was on human resource, and people don't seem to get as excited about that as they do an old growth forest. I think in terms of what my emphasis was, which related to human resource, jobs, helping people, even in welfare, making them, you know, not taking away their pride and self-esteem. To me, these were all important things. I feel bad that I didn't do as much for the minorities as I really wanted to do. I feel really bad of not getting the state involved in prevention rather than always putting money into new jails. But all of it related to the human resource, and that doesn't mean we forgot it. The Northwest Regional Power, that was mine. Uh-huh. The matter of fish, we put that in. We put that in. I'm telling you things nobody knows. I know it. We're really jumping, but...
But do you think that people would have known this had there been... I mean, I guess we're going a little bit in circles, but had you had that kind of flair or promotion that would have given more light to the,
well,
the
it's hard
achievements
to, you know,
that you
it's
have
hard
made.
To, I can't figure out, when I say this to you, I don't really know the answer. I didn't want to spend my energy figuring what the next press release was going to be.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to spend my energy, time, and emotions on doing it. Now, I know that's not good politics. In terms of sheer politics. I understand. Hell, I've been around a long time. I know about all those things. And yet, I remember watching my fellow legislators, House members, senators, I can think of one in particular, while we're in a hearing, while we're listening to testimony, they're writing a press release. Jeez, listen to these people. You know, pay attention. But so that was not my bent. My bent wasn't to tell the world all this stuff. My bent was do it, go do it. Well, that's not good politics. I know enough about that to know that's indeed the case. As a legislator, I didn't do it. I remember way on, I told you when I ran the first time, they said, okay, tell me all the good things you did. I said, oh, wait a minute, I don't know. I don't keep inventory. I didn't write all these things down. With the anticipation I'm going to be doing something. They had to go look it up. Because I don't keep inventory. That's why it's difficult for me to answer some of your questions about Senate Bill, whatever it was, in the 1963 session. You know, I don't keep inventory. I just do it and go on from there.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we're just, you know, I can't explain. I suppose I just determined I'm who I am. I had an opportunity to be a governor. I had an opportunity to be a House member and a senator.
Mm-hmm.
I know I made some constructive changes in government. I know that it's all happened. I feel good. I sleep well at night. Sure, I'd like to have other people know about it. Sure, I'd like to have them say, gee, great, good job, Vic. Mm-hmm. You know, our egos want some of that, but it's not forthcoming. It is forthcoming. It may be the best combination would be a Tom McCall that that would spoke well, grabbed issues, got some important things done, and everybody and the world knows about it. I suppose that's the best of all worlds.
Mm-hmm.
I never pretended to be a Tom McCall. I told the media at the very beginning, don't measure me against Tom. Tom's Tom and Vic's Vic. You got to live with me now. I'm happy to be the governor right now.
Well, going back to 1971.
Yeah.
We left off with your discussion about the emergency board funds.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to remember what my question was, but I think that it had to do with how you determined how much money you would try to set aside for the interim period, how you figured out what you would need, how you would anticipate all the fluctuations.
Yeah, yeah. When you build a budget, you have a budget for state government, and to which you add an ending balance in case you didn't guess right as to the income.
Mm-hmm.
And then you set aside money for the e-board, the emergency board. And that's what you're asking right now. And so that's done right near the very end, the amount of money.
Mm-hmm.
And it's done in the sense by ways and means of some things they know will be coming up after we leave session. So that's so many dollars for that. And then a few more dollars for some things we don't know about. And so that becomes the budget now.
Were you a member of the emergency board?
I was once. I'm glad you asked the question. I was one time. And I kept asking the question during, this is in between sessions when the emergency board operates, I would keep asking the question, what's the emergency? Now, you're not really supposed to ask those questions. Because 999 times out of 1,000, there ain't any emergency. A lot of agencies know that's a lot easier to get some money out of the emergency board than it is to try to get it out of the legislative session.
Well, sometimes the emergency board, to me, appears to be almost a de facto state legislature.
Well, they, actually, Ways and Means is the main one.
Mm-hmm.
But
does the Ways and Means actually meet on a regular basis or in the interim?
No.
They don't.
No, most of the members, a good number of the members of Ways and Means are on the emergency board.
Mm-hmm.
And then once in a while there's somebody extra, which is like I was that one time I was there. The emergency board really doesn't often reach out to subvert what the legislature has done. Once in a while they'll kind of overstep their bounds. The real problem, and it is a real problem with legislators, is the Ways and Means Committee, because they may want to actually start a program, and it goes to a substantive committee with subsequent referral to Ways and Means.
Mm-hmm.
And Ways and Means say, no, we don't want to fund that. After all the hearings and all the talking and all the amending and everything that the substantive committee went through, Ways and Means say, oh, we don't want to do that. We'll do something else. So there's always a complaint. There's been, it's been as long as I've been there, and will probably always be there, that Ways and Means really is acting as a mini legislature and determining what's going to happen and what isn't. So that would happen more often with Ways and Means than it would the e-board.
Except that during the interim, it's the e-board is the primary disperser of funds.
That's
right.
Right.
What constraints are there on the e-board in terms of what they can and cannot do?
Well, mostly if they don't get that much money. They get money, but not that much.
Mm-hmm.
So that would be somewhat limited. There isn't any real constraint. They probably could start something if they wanted to start it. But it's pretty well identified, because oftentimes there are bills that would say that we appropriate this money and come back in the interim. So it's already determined that they're going to come back.
Mm-hmm.
And the legislature votes on that. So a lot of it's what I would call encumbered to start with.
Mm-hmm.
And but so that in terms of discretionary money, they can start doing some things they ought not to be doing. There's very little of that.
How was it that you only were on the emergency board one time? It seems like a rather prestigious committee to be on.
I had a lot of opportunities to be on Ways and Means.
Mm-hmm.
And I made a personal decision. I didn't want to do that.
Why?
Well, I wanted to deal with more questions than what Ways and Means deals with. Now, of course, they do deal with all the budgets of all the agencies. But I wanted to be on education. I wanted to be on revenue. I wanted to be on labor and industries. I wanted to do more things. If you're on Ways and Means, that's all you do.
Mm-hmm.
You get down there and you get buried down there. And you listen to that infinitum to presentations on budgets. And I didn't want to do that.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd been offered. I mean, I could have been on Ways and Means, gosh, I don't know, for a lot of sessions if I wanted to be. So most of it was because I didn't want to be.
And the e-board?
Well, I thought that'd be kind of interesting. But they don't really want people asking questions, what's the emergency? They really don't want that.
But I would think that as minority leader, you could pretty much have your pick. Is that
yes,
true?
Yes, that's true. That's true.
So had you wanted to be on e-board, you could have?
Could have been.
Mm-hmm. Going on, we were talking about some of the, we had just been talking about human resources. And that was one of the areas that we left off on speaking about the last session. There was a controversy over the welfare budget during that term. There was a deficit, and there was some controversy over Governor McCall's handling of it in 1971. Eventually became a House task force on welfare, which made 24 recommendations. Do you recall any of the controversy over that and any involvement on your part?
No, I don't, except the, again, a generic that all, I probably think without exception that welfare would always come up with a deficit near the end of a biennium. Understand that our fiscal years run from June 30th to July 1. Now, the legislature meets, now meeting in January.
Mm-hmm.
We are still in the 91-93 biennium until June 30th. And so the legislature is meeting right now at the same time we're spending some money,
mm-hmm.
appropriated 2 years ago, and at the same time developing a budget for 93-95. Now, having said that, now we're getting near the end of a biennium. The welfare is now running out of money for the money that was appropriated out of the session before. So now they're in session when welfare is going to have a deficit. And that's how all of this controversy takes place during the course of a legislative session. I don't recall the detail of it, nor do I recall there are 24 recommendations. I don't remember that.
In labor, there was an Oregon Agricultural Labor Relations Board established under SB 677. And it would establish collective bargaining, but prohibited strikes during harvest, and was therefore considered to be union busting by some people. Do you recall any of the debate on those issues?
It's hard for me to tell whether it was this one or something else, but I do recall there had been a continuing debate.
Mm-hmm.
As a matter of fact, that's the first time I ever met Vera Katz.
Really?
Now, when I say it was, whether it was 71, I'm not sure. But she was up lobbying with Cesar Chavez. That was the first time I met Vera. She was working on behalf of Cesar Chavez. And the whole idea was both collective bargaining and strike. I can tell you my position in that respect. I didn't really mind if there's a collective bargaining. Striking during the harvest season was something I absolutely would not do. And in understanding strikes, let's say strike one Myron Frank.